For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Texting terms at unlock.com/SMS. Privacy policy at unlock.com/privacy-policy. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Terms and conditions apply. For full details, see unlock.com/legal. After portrayal.
Lisa, thanks for having me over. Your new kitchen is gorgeous. How'd you find the money to do it?
We worked with this great company, Unlock. They help you unlock the future value of your home to get the cash you need today.
So it's a home equity loan?
No, it's not a loan at all. There's no monthly payments and no interest charges ever. And you can use the money however you want. We were able to redo our kitchen and pay off our credit card debt.
Wow, Jack and I could really use this to finally pay off our old student loan debt. How do I get started?
It's easy. Just go to their website.
Text EQUITY to 865-865 to unlock the value in your home and get up to $500,000 in cash with no monthly payments and no interest ever. Pay off debt, improve your home, add to your retirement fund. It's up to you. Text EQUITY to 865-865. Text the word EQUITY to 865-865. Text EQUITY to 865-865 now.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Here we go. Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love. This is another Dolphins podcast. Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for pressing play on another edition of another Dolphins podcast. The long wait is finally over. We have made it to draft week. I have Houts and Katz joining me today to finish our draft prep by taking a big picture look at the Miami Dolphins defense. Boys, we're recording this on Monday, 3 days ahead of the draft, and I gotta say, this is a defensive roster that's feeling pretty incomplete.
Yeah, it sure is, and I think the more picks the Dolphins can get, the better as far as filling a lot of those needs. Their linebacker position is fully stocked, and then every other position, defensive line, cornerback, and safety, are completely mangled right now. So it's gonna be interesting to see if who falls to 13 and if that's gonna be a defensive player.
Yeah, it's hilarious looking at over this roster. I mean, like you mentioned, linebacker, you feel really, really good about this. And a couple of years ago, I mean, you're sitting here wondering what their plan was there. So, yes, so many holes, Jake. It's like a piece of Swiss cheese or something. And we're going to sit here and try to figure out their best way to approach this thing, right? Because they have holes all over that defensive side of the football.
2 years ago, we were sitting here saying the Dolphins aren't going to get any better at defensive tackle. You have a very stout trio that included Christian Wilkins, Zach Sealer, and Raekwon Davis, and it was as simple as that. Boy, how have things changed. The Dolphins are entering the 2025 NFL draft with just four defensive linemen under contract, and there's a little bit of nuance here because these are both defensive tackles and edge rushers and what's mostly a 3-4 defense here with Anthony Weaver. So, Kat, first and foremost, you got Zach Sealer, Benito Jones, who actually played about 600 snaps for the Dolphins last year, Matt Dickerson and Neil Farrell. For those two guys, I think all we have to really say is who. But Sealer, I mean, you got to say there that that's a solid start. If you could only have one defensive tackle, I think you want someone who can wrestle alligators.
Yeah, Sealer is a star, obviously, 20 sacks in the last 2 years or whatever it is. And then Benito Jones, I think, played serviceably last year. So to me, it really bleeds into the question of how are the Dolphins going to be successful. To me, the 2025 Dolphins draft is going to be successful if they can come away with one starter on the defensive line, two rotational players on the defensive line without having to spend their first-round pick doing it. If they can do that, then I think we're going to walk away thinking this is going to be a good draft. So, because what I don't want to have happen here is that the Dolphins at pick 13 take a player like Kenneth Grant or Derek Harmon or Walter Nolan, not because they're the best player, but because we feel like we have to.
And that's kind of almost where they're at, right? You're sitting here wondering, do they have to, you know, go after a defensive tackle? Do they have to go after a cornerback? I'm sitting here wondering, you know, you look at this defensive line unit. We all know how good Zach Sealer is. I think we've all been waiting for him to maybe sign an extension, maybe get paid, maybe what he's worth. But do you think, you know, them having success, just getting him off of Baltimore's, you know, roster, coming in here, seeing what type of player he's become, do you think that allows them to, you know, okay, maybe we can bring in a Benito Jones. Maybe we can bring in this late round guy to kind of fill that hole next to him, because they've seen it time and time again. They've done it before. So, I'm with you, Kat. If they can find a starter, a day one starter on the defensive line and not get them in round one, that would be, you know, a home run draft. But I'm a little bit worried that maybe they do feel compelled and almost like they have to go up there and get a defensive tackle, because like we talked about leading up to this, they put so much stock into that Calais Campbell situation, it seemed, and let so many players who, even some guys on the roster we thought had some, you know, some decent play to them, they let them go off to other teams. So, yes, I think I like Kat's approach to it, but intrigued to see. I don't know that I have a ton of faith in Chris Greer fixing that unit.
I'm trying to figure out what the big idea here is, because you think back to last year, the Dolphins, you know, they filled out Christian Wilkins in aggregate, right? You figured in a few guys who could be good run stoppers, a few guys that could run the passer, rush the passer, excuse me. Josh, you mentioned guys who are here. Deshaun Hand, I think he signed for $4 million or so with the Chargers. Calais Campbell, he's gone. Even if the Dolphins, you know, got so lucky with Calais Campbell last year, they were still aggressively signing. Tier Tart was one guy that stuck in my head, and I think he ended up playing 15, 16 games for the Chargers. Kat, why is the game plan so different? Because even when you were like, all right, maybe we could get Calais Campbell last year and you could see the impact he could have, the Dolphins were still, you know, flipping over every stone possible to find more defensive tackles. Even if they had Calais, I'm still queasy to say that it would have been enough with just, you know, five guys on the roster.
I wonder if Chris Greer thought from the beginning of this year that this is going to be a very, very deep defensive line class in rounds 3 through 5, where we have a lot of draft picks. Now, maybe I'm putting too much faith in Chris Greer for having that type of foresight. But I'll tell you this, in about 25 years of watching the draft, studying the draft, however you want to identify that, this is the deepest I have seen a defensive line in the middle of the draft ever. It's shocking, really. I mean, when you take a look at players like a Riley Mills or a Cam Jackson, somebody who I think is probably the 23rd or 24th defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman in this class, and you look at them and say, I could see them coming in and carving out a role, if not be a starter as a rookie, then that speaks heavily toward the depth of this class.
I just don't know if we can sit here and say Chris Greer, right? I mean, Chris Greer of all people having that foresight, but I mean, you could be right. And this is something that you talked about the very first time we started talking draft, was how deep this defensive line unit is. And another thing we got to remember is Chris Greer kind of touched on, you know, there's still free agents out there at some of these positions in need that, you know, are going to be looking for homes after the draft, when some of the players that maybe they miss on at positions of need. So there are still options out there. I mean, I would hate to sit here and say a Raekwon Davis is a fallback option. Is going to make you feel any better about that unit? I don't think it would. So I'm hoping Chris Greer can prove me wrong and land another defensive tackle worthwhile.
And the issue here is the Dolphins don't just need a defensive tackle. They pretty much need a defensive rotation here in the trenches here, right? Kat, when we get into the draft, when would you kind of start, I don't know if panic's the right word, but when would you kind of feel the Dolphins are starting to miss the bus? Do they need to leave day two, the first three rounds of the draft, with at least one defensive tackle, you feel?
Yeah, I believe so. And it doesn't necessarily need to be done in the first two rounds. A guy that I do look at in round two that could be there that I think would fit an immediate need to be Alfred Collins from Texas. It wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins looked hard at him at pick 48 and had him and just took him off of Texas at 6'6", 332 pounds, and just plugged him right there, starting opposite Zach Sealer. This is somebody who, this was really his first year starting full-time, because he was stuck behind a lot of players at Texas, Byron Murphy being one of them, who was a first-round pick last year. But he got on the field last year, and he really showed his stuff. And he's a selfless player, so I could see him getting in there in the second round. But once you start getting into the third round and the fourth round, you see guys like Ty Hamilton from Ohio State and Ty Robinson from Nebraska are two, again, selfless players who I think could get on the field and fit very well in this defense. there's some defensive linemen here that I take off the board. Like, I mean, I'd say TJ Sanders isn't the greatest fit because in this type of defense, taking up double teams is more important than being able to swim into the backfield. And so I think that those are the players the Dolphins have to be looking at, whether it's in round two, three, four, or five.
I'm glad you threw out Tyreek Williams' name. He's a guy who I took in my mock draft. I don't know. I think you might have left Cap, but he was in like the seventh round. He was still available in that in one of those PFM mock draft simulators. And I was like, yo, I got to pick up this guy, but he's most likely going to be gone, you know, day two. So I would love some of those names. But again, if they have to come out, I agree with you, in those first 2 days with at least one defensive tackle, if not two.
It's the names get confusing here because Tyreek Williams, you got a Tyreek Williams from Ohio State, who's probably going to be a second rounder. You got a Ty Robinson from Nebraska, who'll probably be a third or fourth. You got another Ty Hamilton from Ohio State, who will probably be a third rounder.
Hamilton, it might have been Hamilton, but either way, he was in the seventh round. I'm like, what is going on here?
And then for A&M, you've got Shamar Stewart and you got Shamar Turner, who so
yes,
so those the names get it took a while for me at the end of the college football season to get these names all sorted out.
We'll get them right when they're on the Dolphins. That's when we'll make sure we get them down.
Kat, I'm going to end the defensive tackle talk with a very, very tough question here. You're talking about third round picks, and I can't help but pull up the 71st overall pick in the 2020 NFL draft, a third round selection. Kat, who could Miami's Nnamdi Madubuike be?
Oh, see, yeah. When the third round, you say the 2020 draft, that's when they took, I think, Brandon Jones. And then so...
Because, I mean, I just see, like, that type of process. I mean, you see the Baltimore Ravens, first place in the AFC North. This is now someone, third-round pick, who's parlayed that draft stock into a base contract of $22 million next year. So I kind of see, like, if you want to follow the Baltimore Ravens path, maybe this is where you
do it. Madubuike was a big project when he came out of Texas A&M, and he was young, too. So saying that, let's see here. I mean, I'm going to say – one guy I'll throw out there is that kind of fits that mold a little bit is Jamari Caldwell from Oregon, who's 6'2", 330, and you think he's a big giant. I mean, he played nose tackle for them, but I think he has a lot more athleticism than that. So he's, again, another guy that I'd be elated with if the Dolphins came away with him in the third or fourth round.
Josh, transitioning to edge rusher here. Let's start with a tough one. The Dolphins are absolutely stacked here. You got Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb's back. They restructured his contract. Mo Camara was getting a lot of hype as a former last year fifth round pick. Can't not talk about Chop Robinson, first round pick who really came on strong the second half of the season. Grayson Murphy, Quentin Bell, some excited names in the mix. Josh, when you're looking at this edge rusher unit, Cameron Good, another one. Who's the best edge rusher on the Miami Dolphins?
Oh man, okay. Assuming they're all healthy, I still feel like it's Jalen Phillips. That might just be me being a homer, but he's got to be up there. And then Chop Robinson, man, that first step is just like alien-like. So I think I'd probably battle between those two guys. But you asked Jake here, is this the strongest position on the roster has, you know, in the rundown? And I was sitting here getting hyped about the linebacking unit. But yeah, man, if this group can stay healthy, you could absolutely see the vision, right? Anthony Weaver, we talked about it all season, how, you know, he's probably licking his chops at the idea of having, you know, Bradley Chubb, Chop Robinson, and Jalen Phillips all at his disposal. So I'm going to say Jalen Phillips, but I'm definitely you know, a bit biased. And Chop Robinson, I have to give him credit because that first step, man, like, I don't know that anybody's ever going to be able to duplicate something like that for a while.
Kat, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Chop and Jalen are just two very different players. I mean, one's undersized and runs a 4.47. Another guy has incredible athleticism for his size. I really hope Jalen Phillips comes back, has a strong year, stays healthy, and is here long term. Because, you know, I thought the Dolphins stole him, and he was turning into a star not 1 year but 2 years in a row and tore his ACL. But a couple of things about the edge class here too. And I was listening to Todd McShay earlier today, and he is hearing more and more that there could be a earlier run than expected on the edge class. And if that happens, and you see guys like Jalen Walker and Mykel Williams get taken in the top 10. You see James Pierce go a little earlier than expected. Donovan Azaraku is a guy that I think is one of the more unheralded players of this draft on the edge. If you start seeing these guys go before the Dolphins at 13, that starts pushing offensive linemen and cornerbacks, our cornerback Will Johnson, down the board further and further. And I think that's what we've got to be looking for. But, you know, the Dolphins have to also be open to taking the best player available, because you take a look at the top, like, seven edge rushers: Abdul Carter, Jalen Walker, Shamar Stewart, James Pierce, Mike Green, Mykal Williams, Donovan Azaraku, all of them 22, younger than 22. So when you factor that in and say, okay, this is a Dolphins team that doesn't have a need at edge now, but Jalen Phillips is going to be a free agent soon. Bradley Chubb's going to be 30 soon. So if Mykal Williams is the best player available by far, or Jalen Walker is the best player available by far at 13, at 21 years old, yeah, I think you have to consider it.
That's a tough one for me. I mean, because there's so many unknowns with this roster, but I also think back to the fact, like, Bradley Chubb, he still could reach his $25 million through, like, incentives. And you think about how these snaps are really going to be divided. Josh, let's say the Dolphins were going to draft an edge rusher in the first round. I, you know, split second, just really trying to process this. I almost wonder if you're going to do that with Chop Robinson, Bradley Chubb, Quinton Bell, he's fine. Some other guys who are fine. You almost wonder if the Dolphins, as they're loading off these players and doing a soft reset, do you try to flip Jalen Phillips during the draft if you are drafting a defensive edge in the draft? I know this is a crazy conversation to have, but if you're sitting there and one of those premier edge rushers fall to you, do other dominoes come with that, would you say?
It's possible. I mean, how likely is a team going to be to call about Jalen Phillips based on his injury? I mean, we love him, right? But do other teams feel
third
that way?
Third round pick, you don't think?
That would pain me. I hate even the thought of it, Jake. I was sitting here thinking about it. Like, if they load up and take an edge, say they're obsessed with Jalen Walker, he falls right into their lap. I mean, maybe then they approach this thing where, you know, okay, our secondary is not that great. You know, we're relying on these veterans that we're talking about, you know, our quarterback one right now is Kader Coe. Maybe that's okay if we have a defensive line that can get to the quarterback in, you know, split seconds. So I could see the way they load up in that aspect. And at the same time, I cannot get that Mike McDaniel quote out of my head. Remember, he was like, I love the edge position group. It's my favorite position in football. I'd take one every year if I could. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it would never happen, but I do think then you might look at a guy like Jalen Phillips. If a team were to call, I mean, That would be absolutely crazy. I mean, Bradley Chubb would be another one, right, that maybe a team might call about. But I think if you take a edge rusher, you might sort of approach the season as, like I said, that defense that's going to get to the quarterback and not so much need those clamps on the outside to shut things down, you know, if Jalen Ramsey for some reason leaves.
Phillips and Chubb. Look, I like the idea of that if edge rusher falls to 13. Unfortunately, no team's trading for two guys that have finished the year the way that they have. And because the other part of that, it's not the draft compensation. You got to sign these guys to contract extensions too. And that there's no way in hell that part of it would happen, even though it's a good thought. But I really look at the edge group here and think it's almost as deep as the defensive tackle class. And with the amount of picks the Dolphins have, and hopefully they can find a way to manufacture a few more of them, I really look at some players in this class and think, like a Quay Robinson from Alabama, or someone like Josiah Stewart from Michigan. I really think there's somebody that's going to fall into the fourth or fifth round that normally would be taken in the second or third round. So I think the Dolphins should keep an open mind for that if somebody falls around further than they thought.
I think too, and in no way was I campaigning for a trade for that. That's just if that you get there. I also almost wonder if you want the edge rushers to fall to 13 just so the Dolphins could maybe sneak back a couple picks, pick up that extra third or second. I think that's kind of the scenario you want there, just for those edge rushers to be there just to get off the pick. I do want to ask though, Kat, pick four: Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Cameron Good, Mohamed Kamara, Grayson Murphy, Quinton Bell, and Chop Robinson to be your four-man rotation next year.
Yeah, I think obviously Phillips, Chubb, and Chop would be the top three guys there. I would really want Mo Kamara to be that guy, but the unfortunate thing with him when he came out of Colorado State was he was incredibly productive when he came out of Colorado State, but he wasn't very big and he wasn't very fast. So when you come into the league, if you're not very big, you're not very fast, you're not a special teamer, you start to wonder how is this guy going to get on the radar? So that's something to look out for. Quinton Bell, I actually think in certain spots has shown something. I mean, this guy was a wide receiver at the beginning of his college career. So it's not a surprise that it's taken him a while to get it. And then pretty sure he got hurt last year. just like the other, Cameron Good's also somebody that started to step up in 2023, and then, of course, tears his ACL. to answer your question, I would say, if I had to guess, for the fourth guy would be, I would say Quentin Bell.
I was going to say that. So he everything Kat said, everything Quentin Bell.
Grayson Murphy, guys, come on.
I knew you were going with him. We knew it.
He showed something. I mean, and then what happened? He got
like
hurt.
All of them, like all these guys. Every single it's like the curse of the edge unit.
It's like watching The Ring.
just seeing how we can get jazzed up about these guys as the fourth option. That's my only like thing holding me back from saying like if somebody falls in the third or fourth round. Like I do think that is the Dolphins approach this year as like a must win. Now you do wonder, can a fourth stringer come in and upend, you know, a Mo Kamara or Quentin Bell specifically? I'm not entirely sure. Josh, you mentioned it. What could be the other strongest position group on the Miami Dolphins? This interior linebacker crew is looking impressive. Jordan Brooks, one of three players to start 17 games for the Dolphins last season, and he's projected to be the only one returning to the Dolphins next season. You got Tyrell Dodson after he led the team in interceptions. Channing Tindall is still lurking. Willie Gay Jr. after the season with the Saints is under contract. KJ Britt, formerly of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then you got a couple of practice squad guys, but just right off the top here, the four-man rotation of Brooks, Dodson, Willie Gay, and KJ Britt sounds pretty exciting, Cap.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. Because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yeah, it does. And that's why I think the Dolphins are set with those four guys at the top. I mean, Channing Tindall, I think, is in a spot where now you're on the outside looking in because he really hasn't shown anything. And it makes drafting an inside linebacker, I think, completely off the board unless you're talking about a seventh rounder. Jihad Campbell is somebody that before they re-signed Dodson and before they signed Willie Gay Jr. and KJ Britt, I thought he may have been an interesting guy at this spot in the draft. I've actually, in my mock draft, I just did, I had him go in one spot before 12th to the Cowboys. But I don't see a way for him to really get on the field. And if you take him and you move him to the outside, he's going to have the same problem. So I'd be surprised if the Dolphins go off-ball linebacker anywhere in this draft.
Yeah, this is the most confidence I think I've had in this unit for a long time. I really would love to see Channing Tindall, you know, do something, maybe prove that, you know, they don't need to take an acorn flyer like you mentioned. But I think that's kind of where they're at. I don't see them drafting a linebacker, inside linebacker, very high. And I love the unit that they have now with Jordan Brooks and, you know, whoever's next to him, whether it's Tyrell Dodson, who, you know, we joke, led the team in interceptions being there half a year, or Willie Gay Jr., who, you know, is a different type of linebacker. I like what they did with this unit, and you wonder how much confidence they have in that unit that allows them again to, you know, do what they're doing right now with that defense up front. You know, maybe they feel like those linebackers could ease some of that pain of losing a Christian Wilkins that we've still yet to see that void fill. I guess Calais Campbell helped there, but yeah, I like the linebacker unit other than, you know, them going acorn like an Aubrey Miller or drafting some guy after the draft like we saw years ago that we can get hyped for that we'll never see the day of the field.
The only thing I'm interested about here is the Dolphins this season. Now, the way the Dolphins are investing in players is very different than how a normal team would. You know, there's a lot of cap constraints. There's a lot of issues that this team has to work through. Looking back to those Anthony Weaver, Baltimore Ravens teams, when it was Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith, I mean, two of the best linebackers in the entire league. But the Ravens really had both of those guys on the field 90%+ of the snaps. So I'm really interested to see what the Dolphins are trying to find here, because you have one of those guys, you know, I said it, Jordan Brooks started 17 games, but you need that running mate who's going to be there the whole year. If you think it's Tyrell Dodson, I'm interested why, you know, you sign Willie Gay, somebody who's a Super Bowl winning linebacker who can be in the mix here. So I'm interested to see what the Dolphins are going to try to do different here by having a little bit deeper, a little more experienced group at linebacker compared to that Baltimore Ravens vibe where it was like, hey, we have two studs, we're going to stick with them, and that's kind of the end of the
Yeah, linebacker, and I mean, the Dolphins are doing the same thing at inside linebacker here. I mean, you look at the snap counts last year, two inside linebackers on the field nearly every play. The flaw they've had, they had last year, is that they had David Long out there for 60, 70. I mean,
team captain.
I mean, that is something that should have been very easily seen, that we cannot have this guy out there for 70 snaps a game trying to cover people. Like, he's going to get picked apart. And he didn't. He was so bad, they cut him in the middle of the season, didn't care where he went. So I like that Tyrell Dodson is here because, what, 3 interceptions in 9 games last year, made plays, and he's got a lot of range. And Willie Gay was known for his range with the Chiefs and with the Saints. Didn't play a lot with the Saints. And also at Mississippi State, that's what got him drafted in the second round. So I like that signing. And K.J. Britt's more of your plugger. And I think he has a little more upside than Anthony Walker and Duke Riley had. So, yeah, I like what the Dolphins have at inside linebacker. But this whole conversation shows that this is probably the direction they're not going in.
Preach.
Josh, do you have a final eulogy for Channing Tindall or anything here? You want a final case to make here?
No, there's nothing to make. I mean, you could go back and watch in college. He made some plays that got me a little bit excited. I think even in preseason he showed a little bit of something. But oh man, not a lot to say. Sorry, Channing, I'm out.
A position we have a lot to say about is the cornerback position. Jalen Ramsey, Kader Kohu, Cam Smith, former first-round pick Artie Burns, Ethan Bonner, Storm Duck, Isaiah Johnson, Jason Maitre, Ryan Cooper Jr. Kat, of all the names I just said for cornerbacks, how many of them are starting for the Dolphins on opening day?
Ramsey, I'm sure he'll be out at some point. Kader Kohu is the one I point to and say, yeah, I think he's starting he's a guy I believe in on the team. I hope that's somebody they do lock up long term. I mean, he had a great first year. He had a pretty down second year, and I thought he was a lot better last year. I like him more inside. But I wonder if the Dolphins are gonna look at those like top 4 guys and Kader Kohu, Cam Smith, Storm Duck, Ethan Bonner, and whoever else they draft here outside, even if it's outside the first round. Say, you know what? We're just going to see what we have this year. I don't think that's exactly a winning strategy, but maybe if you put Cam Smith out there in a starting role, let him grow in that role, maybe you come away with something. But yeah, overall, it is thin ice and scary waters there for the Dolphins at cornerback right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest. My jaw hit the floor when I heard it. I don't even know if he was asked a question about Cam Smith, but at some point Chris Greer is just like discussing it. He's like, we gotta stop holding his hand, you know, it's sink or swim time for him now. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, so I mean, I feel like that cat almost is kind of the direction they're going with this, you know. Maybe I still feel like we're going to be talking cornerback early in this draft class, but after that, I mean, you're just going out there, you know, you're relying on guys outside of Kader Kohu. I mean, Artie Burns, I guess he has some experience, right? He's a guy that has played in the NFL a little bit, but I don't know that he really strikes confidence in me. So even Kader Kohu, I like him better inside. So I think Jalen Ramsey will be gone. This is my long-winded way of saying I think he will be gone, and they're going to have to figure out a way, and these guys are going to have to sink or swim now. And I think it's very ballsy of Chris Greer in his – what looks like it could be his final season, or at least his, you know, do or die year, to be like, all right, we're going to trust in Cam Smith. We're going to trust in these guys. You know, I feel like you would have had a better backup plan than relying on Cam Smith in your, you know, last chance in Miami.
So I've been panicking about this because this whole offseason, the idea that, hey, you have Jalen Ramsey back there. You have somebody who's going to be able to move around the entire defense back there. That's supposed to be this huge benefit for the defense. But then I started thinking, and I'm sorry if my computer froze. Did my computer freeze? Okay, sorry about that. Do you guys remember Cordray Tankersley started like 15 games for the Dolphins in like 2016 across from Xavier Howard? It kind of like took me off the ledge when I figured out, or I started thinking about the fact the Dolphins have been this unprepared in the past. I thought that Cam Smith quote was also very interesting because, Josh, a former second round pick, they just swept under the rug. What I think is so interesting about the cornerback group, it's been so poorly mismanaged. 2020, you have Xavier Howard coming off arguably being the defensive player of the year. You signed Byron Jones to be one of the highest paid cornerbacks in the NFL just to piss off Xavier Howard. The same offseason, you draft Noah Igbinoghene as a first round cornerback who does absolutely nothing. You pay Byron Jones, you pay Xavier Howard, you pay Jalen Ramsey, you draft Cam Smith, and it's just all falling apart. I do really wonder what's happening here, but Kat, we haven't had a podcast since it's been announced that Jalen Ramsey and the Miami Dolphins are planning to part ways. What I want to ask you here is, Is this something that you think was kind of sprung on the Dolphins? Do you think they would have done things differently this offseason if they knew that Jalen Ramsey wasn't going to be part of the plan moving forward?
No, I think they've known about this for a while. I mean, just take a look at Jalen Ramsey's cryptic tweet the day after they lost their final game. I mean, to me, what he and Tyreek Hill said after the game is what they meant. Like, and anything else is damage control. And then secondly, you have to wonder with the amount of money that they were moving around to keep in their pocket, were they preparing for Jalen Ramsey possibly to make an exit and for them just to be done with the situation? And so, no, I think they've known about this for a while. Ramsey doesn't want to be here. I don't want him here if he doesn't want to be here. And I think the Dolphins are going to have to – I mean, my hope is Will Johnson falls to pick 13. That's the guy I want. And if not, then I think you've got to swing it to at one or two of these cornerbacks here in the middle rounds. And in a zone defense that Anthony Weaver plays, hopefully you come away with something. But, yeah, it is depressing that when you talk about Xavier Howard and Byron Jones and Jalen Ramsey and drafting Cam Smith in the second and Igbinoghene in the first, that here we are talking about your starting cornerbacks being undrafted free agents over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's baffling, and it absolutely is frustrating. And I feel like I agree with Kat. I feel like they did know about this for a while, and that's kind of the issue, right? The fact that this is what you decided to do. You went out there, you signed Artie Burns, you're out here admitting that you need to stop holding Cam Smith's hands. Like, I don't feel like that's, again, good enough. So I feel like it's something they've known about. I hope that there's a way that they can move on from him. I mean, I think it's kind of weird they saying this is what's best for the Dolphins now and in the future, getting rid of Jalen Ramsey. I mean, you can look at the roster and say, I don't know how that's the case in the now, but whatever the reason is, it's time for him to go. I kind of feel like it's the same thing with Tyreek Hill, but praying that the Dolphins can hit on some guys. And you wonder if, you know, his success on getting a Kader Kohu and Storm Duck, I mean, I guess we're more hyped about him than maybe we should be, but a Storm Duck, those kind of guys as acorns, do they feel like they can hit on just about any of these cornerbacks? Maybe he does, but I'm definitely queasy about this. And for so many weeks, we sat here and said, let's let Will Johnson fall into our lap. And then we kind of, if we missed on him, I know personally in mock drafts, I would go elsewhere. I wouldn't really rely, like, head make sure I got a cornerback. The Dolphins need to get a cornerback. They need to get at least one, maybe two, and it's got to be a guy that's ready to come in and start, you know, wherever that may be on this defense.
Kat, Jahdae Barron is one name that's also been linked to the Dolphins quite a bit. Is that a name you'd be talking about in the top 15, or is that someone you'd prefer be, hey, let's trade down a little bit, let's wait, he's somebody whose demand isn't going to be necessarily as high, like someone like Johnson?
Oh, I think Barron might be taken before Johnson now, and this might be the smartest defensive player in this draft in terms of the amount of the types of coverages he's played, his instincts. I mean, he can play inside and outside. I don't know if he's an elite cornerback on the outside. That's my biggest thing. And then from that point, if you've got he and Kader Kohu, who I think are better on the inside but can play outside, maybe you're not maximizing your resources. That's why I think Will Johnson's so important. Will Johnson, 6'2", 200 pounds. Even if he isn't, doesn't have the fastest long speed, which it looks like he does not, that doesn't matter as much in this type of defense as it does in other ones. In a Brian Flores defense, it would be huge. You have to do a lot in a Brian Flores defense. Here, you can rely more on instincts and length. And you look at last year, you know, you could say, okay, he only played six games because of an injury. He had turf toe last year, all right? He doesn't have turf toe anymore. So it's not like we're talking about a torn ACL here. So I think it's incredibly important Will Johnson is there at pick 13, and I think he will be.
Man, that makes me excited. He's kind of been our no matter what, right? The whole draft days type thing, Will Johnson, our guy. But Barron, I mean, he's a guy who I do see him getting mocked. You know, some might even have him at cornerback one. I looked it up. He played, and throughout his career, he played out wide at 1,133 snaps, in the slot 917, and then as a box safety, 508. So he does have that versatility, which, you know, I mean, I hate it, right? The Dolphins, they love that versatility shit. So maybe they see that and they eat it up. But I continue to go back to just Will Johnson, like Kat said, better suited for the outside. And the fact that he's from Michigan, right? I mean, at some point, Stephen Ross has to get his Michigan boy. And I feel like this would be the perfect thing. The Dolphins need a cornerback. So do you think if the Will Johnson goes, I mean, do either of you think if Will Johnson goes that they would reach and go Barron? Because, you know, okay, well, he shouldn't be here. He's versatile. He fills a position of need. Do you think then they reach, or do they then go for a defensive tackle or someone else?
For me, after you take the obvious guys off the board that I've mentioned, you know, the Abdul Carter, Mason Graham, Ashton Gentry, you know, list of six players. You pretty much know who they are. Armand Membu and Will Johnson have always been my top two guys. And then after that, if you have to make a pick at that spot, there's not a lot separating like the third guy from the 10th guy for me. And Jahdae Barron is in that group. He's probably a little bit further toward the bottom. But yeah, that'd be the million-dollar question. Do you go with the potential of a Kenneth Grant, where if he can put it all together and put it all together quickly, you've not only addressed your biggest need, but you could have a guy with star potential. Jahdae Barron, again, I think he's versatile, unbelievably instinctive, and yeah, I think Barron, regardless, ends up going in the middle of the first round.
I want to bring it back to Jalen Ramsey here real quick, because in an offseason that the Dolphins were pinching so many pennies and trying to budget so well, this is the issue with random contract extensions. I think last year, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Ramsey, sorry, they aren't necessarily contract extensions. They started guaranteeing more money in the contract just to keep them happy. The cost of trading Jalen Ramsey, the cap number is currently $16.7 million for the Dolphins, but it balloons to $25.2 million because of the signing bonus that was spread out over the next few years as part of void years and different things like that. So this is kind of as real as you're going to get to the salary cap not being fake. But Kat, what are you hoping to get back for Ramsey? Obviously, the Dolphins traded a third round pick and Hunter Long, so you could say 2 third round picks. They gave Ramsey the new contract too when he's 2 years older. What would you really be happy to hear? Like, you know, you hear the buzzer on during the draft and it's for a Jalen Ramsey trade. What do you want the Dolphins getting?
I would be happy to get a third round pick back. I don't think they would, given that he's several years older now and has made it clear he doesn't want to be in Miami and that he has a big salary. So if we heard Jalen Ramsey was moved, I would expect for it to be a late round pick. And what a shame that is. And you have to ask yourself, between Jalen Ramsey, Tyreek Hill, Teron Armstead, and Calais Campbell, why do four Hall of Famers not want to play here? And that's a tough question that you got. I don't know if Campbell will make the Hall of Fame, but the other three will. And that's a tough pill to swallow when you're looking at your head coach and your general manager.
Yeah, I feel like you just kicked me in the nuts. I mean, I knew it deep down inside, but hearing it out loud, you're just like, oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the same situation I feel like I'm in. I don't feel like we're going to get something back that's going to make us go, you know, that was a good trade. The Dolphins, you know, they got back fair value. I think at this point, you'd be lucky to get a third, but whatever it is, it's going to be one of those things that just had to happen. And again, at some point, we'll find out the reason, the true reason, right? Whether it's scheme, whether it's money. They said it wasn't money, but I still laugh at the fact that the Dolphins gave him that extension, or you know, added the whatever they did to, you know, make him the highest paid corner in football at one point, just to make him happy, to then have, you know, for lack of better words, a down year, and now he wants to ride off into the sunset. It just seems like it's the Miami way as of late. So I don't know, man, but thanks Kat for bringing us all back down to reality and reminding us that, man, all these great players do not want to be a Miami Dolphin.
Two more questions here about cornerback. First, second and third round options. Let's say the Dolphins go, you know, we need to build the trenches. We take Kelvin Banks at 13 for good or bad. Who are some of the guys maybe day two that you're like, all right, the Dolphins still desperately need a cornerback. I'd say it's probably a bigger need than defensive tackle, all things considered. Who would you want them taking?
Yeah, so again, it goes back to the Dolphins having more of a zone defense than they did under like a Brian Flores. So it takes a few players off the board for me. I don't think Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky, Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame, or Savone Revell from East Carolina, who's incredibly talented. I don't think they're the best fits in this defense. I think they're more man coverage guys. Not saying they can't do it, but Azariah Thomas is interesting because he's a big, long physical cornerback. He only ran a 4.58. So if you're going to limit his coverage responsibilities and he's not covering all the way downfield, I could definitely see some potential there. A fascinating guy is Darian Porter from Iowa State. This is somebody who at Iowa State played 63 games in his career. Seven of them were starts at cornerback. Then, and people rave about him as a great teammate. You know, he's willing to do whatever on either side of the ball. He's a good mentor, all that. And then he comes out and he runs a 4.3 flat at 6'3", 197 pounds. And he played great in the seven games. Is he a zone? Is he a man guy? I don't know. He's one of the true enigmas in this draft. And Chad Reuter, I think, had him go and mock to the Dolphins in the third round, which would be
worth
fascinating.
Worth the risk, would you say? Third round for someone who's a little bit of an unknown there?
Definitely. Definitely for his size, speed combination. And then you've got so many pick-your-flavor guys, like Kobe Bryant from Kansas is big feisty. He's a feisty, playmaking but very thin cornerback. He's somebody I like in certain situations. Quincy Riley from Louisville isn't the biggest or the fastest, but has a lot of interceptions at Louisville. Dorian Strong, I think, projects well as a zone cornerback. Denzel Burke from Ohio State seems like he's been there forever, but you know he probably had his worst year, but I think overall is a solid mid-rounder. So. And another real deep sleeper is Zah Frazier from University of Texas San Antonio, somebody who's 6'3", 200 pounds, and ran in the 4.3s and freakishly had the three-cone drill, which really measures your agility. I'm pretty sure he knocked that out of the park. I don't have that directly in front of me here. But, he's somebody that came from the same school as Reek Woolen from the Seahawks and is looking like almost as big of an athletic freak. So I think as we get further down the draft at cornerback here, I think there is some value, especially in a defensive system that doesn't put as much emphasis on having great cornerbacks as we saw in previous regimes.
So hearing you talk about some of those mid-round guys, does that make you, I guess, more okay then to say Will Johnson's gone, you don't want to reach home bear, and then you would be okay, you know, maybe going defensive tackle and landing like a guy in the second round? You know, I know Trey Amos is one of those other guys that you talked about throughout the draft class. You feel confident in those second tier guys, you know, that they could come in and I guess start opposite of Kader Kohu week one?
So you know, that's a good question, because first I think Will Johnson is the best at the time would be the best defensive back or defensive tackle prospect on the board at pick 13. And then from that point, even though cornerback, I do like the depth. I like the depth pretty of a lot of positions in this draft in the middle rounds. That's why part of me hopes they trade down and accumulate even more picks. But if they draft Will Johnson, I think they're getting the best player available at 13. And I like the depth at defensive line even better than I like it at cornerback.
Final question about cornerbacks, Kat, real quick here. Let's say the Dolphins draft a guy in the first two rounds. Cam Smith, Storm Duck. Who's the other starter on the outside? Josh?
Yes, it had Storm Duck. I like Cam Smith. The few all 22 games I watched, I remember feeling pretty okay about Cam Smith. But there's no confidence in there. He needs to drop his nuts, so Storm Duck.
The final position, and Chris Greer turned some heads with this one. The Dolphins currently have five safeties under contract: Elijah Campbell, Melifonwu, Ashton Davis, Patrick Morris, and Jordan Colbert. Kat, let me ask you this. Chris Greer said that the Dolphins currently have two starting safeties under contract. Fact or fiction?
I'd say fiction, and they're being very optimistic about that. I think when you look at the top four guys who on the roster right now, Melifonwu, Ashton Davis, Elijah Campbell, Patrick McMorris, I would call them more unproven than anything. But if you go with four really unproven players / career backups, you're probably not coming away with two great starters.
Yeah, it made me feel queasy. I think even a couple weeks ago, Jake, you asked, you know, are the starting safeties on this roster? And I joked, you wanted a percentage. I think I said 69%. And I said that scares me that that's even that high. And then he comes out and, again, maybe this is smoke and mirrors, but I kind of feel like they feel real confident in Ashton Davis and Melifonwu maybe more so than they should. And, you know, Elijah Campbell, we've seen him make plays, you know, a little bit here and there. And I cannot stop joking about Patrick Morris not even being on the team page. So it scares me that he said that. I hope that they're just bluffing, that they find another guy to throw in there. But it would not surprise me at all if on, you know, week one we got Iffy out there and Ashton Davis, and we're just praying. We're praying that they become the prospects that, you know, maybe they were in college that they didn't quite translate to yet, because, man, that's scary. You know, we had Javon Hahn and Jordan Porter. That's not great, but I feel like this isn't much better. It doesn't bring me much hope.
Not a lot of experience in the group. I think they have a combined 30 starts, and they've been into the NFL for a combined 9 seasons. So that's really it. You're really optimistic here. You're hoping someone like Patrick Morris can do the trick. Kat, we are running out of time here, but I want to ask you, because this is the last time we'll talk before the draft, do you have one final proclamation or one thing we really got to keep in mind here as we get ready for draft night? Because, I mean, this defense is just in such a rough and ugly spot, and the Dolphins are going to have to do a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, just to run over the safety class, I mean, Malachi Starks, I think, has been popularly projected. I think that's a little too rich for me at 13, and I don't think you can go Nick Emmanuel, who's a physical freak but more of a raw player, when you're trying to rebuild the entire secondary. I think you might ruin that guy. Starks, I believe, is a more of a polished player, didn't have the greatest year at Georgia. Kevin Winston tore his ACL in week 2 this past year, but I loved him. And I think he's a fantastic prospect, but can you draft a guy that back in September tore his ACL with all the injury problems? I don't know if you can. Xavier Watts from Notre Dame has 13 picks in his last 2 years at Notre Dame and is a zone safety guy. He's popularly projected in the second round. Not the biggest or the fastest, though. And Jonas Sanker from Virginia is a player I'd love in the third or fourth round. I think Josh had him mocked in one of his mock drafts a few weeks ago. But as far as a proclamation, I get a bad feeling that the pick at 13 is Derek Harmon from Oregon, and I would not like that because I don't think you're maximizing your value there. I mean, but if you I just look at the defensive line and think you had to either have faith that someone was going to fall to you, or several players are going to fall to you in rounds 3 through 5, or you had somebody picked out at 13 from the beginning that necessitated you not going after a couple of free agents here. So we'll see. That would be a very – Harmon's a good prospect, but I think he's more of a late first-round guy. It'd be a disappointing pick for me. So I go back to what I've said for months. I want either Armon Membo, who I don't think will fall to 13, or Will Johnson to fall to 13, or a trade down. Those are still my three options.
Do you have a name at 13? I mean, I know who you want, but is there a guy that you're just like, okay, this is who the Dolphins are going to take, whether I like it or not?
Will Johnson, I think, will be the pick at 13.
Please, Jesus.
Yeah, that's. I think it makes way too much sense for the scheme that they play. And I think offensive linemen and pass rushers are going to force Will Johnson down to pick 13.
Perfectly said. Kat, thank you so much for your insight as always. That is it. That has reached our end of Kat's draft coverage. Kat, we thank you so much for all you do for this podcast, not only during draft season, but throughout the entire year. Thank you all so much for listening to another Dolphins podcast. We will be back with some more draft content sooner rather than later. But until then, fins up.
Fins up.